Nick Ashew on the Fan. You know, Commanders regression in year two under Jaden Daniels, actually a very common theme around the NFL. I'm not, you know, I'm not over-exaggerating when I say this. The Athletic polled 31 coaches and front office people. This is kind of one of those things they do. And again, lots of media outlets will do this as we get ready for the NFL season or, you know, any sport. But there's one question that really stood out to me. And it was name three teams. So they gave these 31 coaches and front office personnel, anonymously doing this, they gave them three votes, and they said vote for the three teams that you think will fall short of expectations. Name three teams that will fall short of expectations. Only the Lions got more votes than the Commanders. It was like 16-9. So the Lions were the overwhelming favorite to fall short of expectations. Now, expectations is kind of a loaded word because this becomes one of those situations where it's very subjective, right? Are the expectations too inflated? Where do the expectations come from? Are they common expectations? Like, where are we going with this? But I think we can generally understand here, right? The expectations are for the Lions, let's look at here first, since they were the ones that got far and away the most votes in this, which, by the way, they said in The Athletic in this article, this is usually not a runaway vote, this specific question, name three teams that will fall short of expectations in the NFL, because it is so subjective and expectations can mean a lot of things. But with the Lions, right, the expectations are still what they've done the last couple of seasons under their head coach and with the offense that they have and with the talent they have on that roster. But the Lions getting the most votes makes sense to me. Commanders is a little bit more of a what if. For the Lions, we've seen this movie before when teams lose their offensive and defensive coordinator for head coaching jobs in the same offseason. Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, gone. Head coaches, Chicago, Jets. Good luck, Aaron Glenn, by the way, with the Jets. Nobody's been able to tame that wild horse. The Eagles really regress when that happened to them after they won the Super Bowl, right? And this is part of the problem. This is why we were so worried that Cliff Kingsbury was going to leave in the offseason. And he was talking to teams about head coaching jobs, but you know, he realized this was a better situation for him. And I'd argue that that's actually the case. Listen, the grass ain't always greener. Just because you get an opportunity to be a head coach doesn't mean that that's the right opportunity, right? There's a reason why a lot of these coaching candidates didn't want the Cowboys job. Now, I know that was dragged out for a while. There were a lot of guys off the market at that point. But the reality of it is, just because there's a head coaching vacancy, people love the narrative. There's 32 openings in the NFL, and those jobs are rare. Yeah, they also can suck. They can also be a really bad job that isn't worth you actually taking, okay? Just because there's a job available doesn't mean it's a job you should actually take. The Eagles regressed when that happened to them and they lost their coordinators, but they've obviously fixed that. So it could happen to Detroit. You knew eventually Aaron Glenn, Ben Johnson were going to take head coaching jobs. The question was just when, not if, when. So smart organizations will make sure they're grooming the next guy up. And you have the understanding of how you're going to build, likely from within the organization. That's not always the case, but likely within the organization. They know the system. They know the culture. You know, the players, all of those things. Those things all matter. So the Lions getting by far and away the most votes for naming teams that are going to fall short of expectations in this Athletic poll makes sense. Commanders, though, coming in at number two, kind of plays to what I was talking about earlier, where it's a lot of what ifs, but it's also inflated expectations. Like, if we talk about fall short of expectations, the expectations for the Commanders are get to the Super Bowl. But is that actually fair? Like, I know you want that to happen. I want to see them in the Super Bowl. Of course I do. That ride in the playoffs last year after what you saw in the regular season, incredible. This was by far and away last season, by far and away, the most incredible season I've ever had as a fan of this team. Not even covering it, talking about it. No. As a fan of this team, incredible. Boom. Didn't it feel a little inflated to you? Weren't you worried the bubble was going to burst at some point? Didn't burst until they saw the Eagles, and at that point you're like, it's an NFC Championship game. We're fine. Right? There were literally Eagles and Commanders fans in the parking lot after that curb stomping, chanting together, Dallas sucks. Because in the end, it was big brother and little brother. Hey, great season. Hey, you guys too. Good luck. There was no rivalry there at that moment. It was just like, we exceeded expectations, and we're looking at you guys saying that you guys where you're supposed to be, everything's fine. But now the expectations are get back to where you were if you're the Commanders. Well, what if those expectations are just inflated? Like, if the Commanders win 10 games this year with a tougher schedule, but they still look like a team that's improved, I think on paper we can certainly argue that they've made the right improvements. They've gotten better. They fixed some holes in that offensive line on paper. I know, dangerous. We've done the on-paper game a lot before. This team has a million offseason champion banners that we would like to forget. But this is very different, obviously, than what you had before. But, you know, if you work past that, you say, well, maybe the expectations are just inflated. So, like, to see the Commanders come in with the second most votes for teams that will fall short of expectations, you kind of go to yourself, well, yeah, the expectations are kind of ridiculous. Again, I will maintain this team is still rebuilding. They are not. Like, we would not have, this time a year ago, we were not looking at them as a championship contender. And yes, the biggest question mark was, what does Jaden Daniels look like his rookie year? Well, okay, like, here we are, and we know now. But if you really were to do, like, a blind comparison of other rosters compared to them, like, where do they really sit? Yeah, they're a top 10 team, but a lot of it is also based on what you saw last year and the what-ifs in terms of the improvements they made. Is Laremy Tunsil going to protect the quarterback? That's the key. Is the defense hang on with some of the older guys they've got there, especially as a pass rush? Is the run game look more capable than they did last year? Is the secondary better? There's a lot of question marks still with this team. And yes, there's the what-if of Jaden Daniels' regression. What if? But what do we even consider regression for Jaden Daniels? Like, are we going strictly by numbers? Throws for 3,400 yards instead of 3,500 and 20 touchdowns, but has 10 rushing and, you know, like, but he looks better and smarter and you know, even more poised in the pocket and still really clutch when it matters the most. I mean, what if the schedule is tougher? I mean, on paper, yeah, it's the eighth toughest schedule by the, again, these metrics are last year's record for these teams, which you throw that out, it's stupid, I'll never use that. And the other way you could look at it is average win totals, which are predictions, again, for this season. So it's like you kind of get done with it and go, we don't know what the schedule really means to them, other than the quarterback matchups. That's the one that I look at and say, okay, that tells you how tough that this thing could actually be. And again, they didn't see a lot of tough quarterback play last year, and that's where my biggest concern is. I think in the end, look, their win total's at 9.5. I think they could be a 10-win team. I don't think we're going much farther than that. But that could still be a better team with 10 wins than where they were last year, right? You got to look for the individual things that makes this team better. Plus, like, okay, aging roster in some areas. That's a what-if for the Commanders. Well, what if they manage the snaps well and the snap count and how much Bobby Wagner and Von Miller see the field? And those are the two that come to my head, but they're not the only ones. Everybody's talking about how old this defense is. And I mean, in some spots, yeah. So it's a very tough spot to talk about expectations for a team heading into the season and then saying, well, we also think they're going to fall short. Now, I get it. I mean, again, like, I know how this stuff works, and there's a lot of things there's ideas we have, and we think about it, we talk about it in the offseason, and it's like, well, maybe, yeah, okay. The Lions could be in a spot, though, where it's a lot tougher for them to come close to where they've been, and they may have already peaked. Like, when they lost to the Commanders in the playoffs last year, it felt to me like that was the end. That was the max for that team. That was it. Because you knew at that point, you probably weren't keeping your coordinators again. Ben Johnson had already been out on the market for a couple of years as a potential head coaching candidate. Aaron Glenn was rising as well. It just kind of felt like at that point, that was it. Like, that had been the peak. That was the max for that roster. Now, they could win 11 games this year, right? Same thing, but then they lose in their first playoff game. Big possibility that's the case. I feel bad for Lions fans, I do. Like I said, I always feel bad for any fan base that suffered, because, like, I feel your pain, right? Lions fans have had it bad. You know, and this will still be a good team. There's a lot of talent on this roster. And they dealt with tons of injuries, especially late in the season last year. Defense, particularly, was a problem. But it's tough. This is why teams go for it, right? You go for it right at that moment. and you want to build out your roster and spend money in other areas when your quarterback's on a rookie deal, or you want to go out and make aggressive moves in the offseason because you feel like your win now window is now. There's very few organizations that stay at the top for an extended period of time. It's one thing to be a firework, right? Ooh, big bright lights. Ooh, flashy. Ooh, you're fun. And now it's all over. Okay? Then there's another when you actually can maintain that consistency. Getting to the top of the mountain is one thing. Staying at the top and not getting knocked off is another. And that's why, love him or hate him, peak Bill Belichick Patriots era. So North Carolina and TCU are scoreless still. It's weird to see him on the sidelines there with North Carolina. The Patriots spent two decades, essentially, as a Super Bowl contender. Okay? You know how insanely hard that is? It's hard to do it for three straight seasons and be in that category, let alone two decades. It's why the Chiefs, like, now the Chiefs have become the team that people hate. Why? I mean, it's one thing if you're a Bills fan. I get it. Okay? But, like, for me, I look at the Chiefs and go, I want the Commanders to be that. I want my football team to be that. That's it. That's what I want to see. So it's like, to get to a point where you're doing it for an extended period of time, there are so many moving parts for an organization to be able to establish that. So it made the Patriots so great with the coaching turnover that they had, even though the Bill Belichick coaching tree, as we know, never successful because he really hid all the secrets from everybody except Josh McDaniels, yet he still couldn't be a head coach. The Chiefs are where they are right now. And the Lions have to show that they're going to be able to deal with some of the coaching turnover to start if they want to stay at the level that they're at. I think the Eagles are going to be a team that's going to be there for a while. They've proven they can overcome, even if it's not right away, overcome losing offensive, defensive coordinator, head coaching jobs, those types of things. They've proven that they can do that. And that's where the Commanders need to be. Because eventually Cliff Kingsbury is probably going to leave for a head coaching job. Now, does that mean that it's a better spot? Make him the highest-paid offensive coordinator, and make him the highest-paid coordinator in the NFL. Like, there's that much value with offensive coordinators, especially in today's league, with the way that the NFL is. In today's league, offensive coordinators are just as important, if not more, than a head coach. Because you can have a walk-around head coach, right? He's just a manager. He dictates what everybody's going to do and make sure that he kind of like runs the show, but he's not hands-on. The coordinators and the position coaches and all that will handle the responsibilities trickle down. Offensive coordinators are as important as they've ever been. So if you're the Commanders, there's two ways that you could go. It could be where Detroit might be heading, where it's like, can you handle all this turnover, or can you build yourself for the long-term future? And that's what we're going to see over the next couple of seasons. It's not just about this year. Because they can take a step back this year record-wise and still be a team that's improving. And that's one of the biggest things to keep in mind. But the inflated win total last year for this team and the inflated playoff results have created a bubble that a lot of people around the NFL think is going to burst for Washington this year. But again, if it's regressing back to the mean of like maybe a team that would have won 6 games last year and 9 wins this year, and they finished with 10 wins this year as opposed to and then 12 and 10. Like, you know what I mean? Like, really, are we really going to be that upset? As long as you show progression, that's one of the most important things. All right, North Carolina on the board for his first touchdown for Bill Belichick as the head coach of North Carolina. Weird world. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. You know, you can look at some of these young quarterbacks around the NFL and just kind of looking at what we've had in terms of quick, instant success. Man, situation dictates so much of that success around the NFL. Like, if Jaden Daniels had drafted number 2 overall, come to Washington, but you had the previous regime there, he's not having the same success. It really, really matters. It's why, look, I know everybody got mad at like Caleb Williams' dad for that. Was an article in like GQ or whatever it was, where he kind of hinted at, you know, almost like kind of forcing him to certain teams, and he didn't. When you think about it, how much control does a professional athlete have over their career? I mean, honestly. Now, granted, stars have more leverage, and you're only going to continue to get more, especially just, you know, even in college now. Guys are transferring. I don't have a problem with players transferring when they go to a program and then they find out that, like, you're not going to get an opportunity for 2 years. and the situation changed. This, oh, you're committed to the program, you should stay. What? What? That's the mindset of someone that stayed at a job for 40 years. That's great if you did, and the company treated you well, and it worked for everybody, built, had a great career, great life, great. That's fine. But, like, are you going to commit yourself to a job that you walk in and go, oh, my God, I am, you're like Ron Burgundy in the bear cage, and you're like, I immediately regret this decision. Like, that's, that happens. So to be in a spot where you have some level of control over where you're going to go is it's a rare thing. And within reason, I don't mind athletes trying to take control of that. We see it a lot more in the NBA. I get that. And now college, it's, you know, in a lot of ways out of control. But if Jaden Daniels had been drafted by a team that was poorly run, which in the past used to be Washington, what would his career have looked like? I mean, there was, remember those rumors of, like, he actually wanted to go to the Raiders? Like, what were you thinking? Like, what if he'd been drafted by the Raiders? Not with Pete Carroll, but, like, pre-Pete Carroll. That's, it dictates so much of it. Like, this is the thing. The Commanders are where they are. We know this. I'm not going out on a limb when I say this. They are where they are. They're in the position where they're in. We talked about before that Athletic article last segment. Name the three teams that'll fall short of expectations. Commanders came in second. 31 coaches, front office people were polled by the Athletic. They do this every year. Lions, then Commanders. But, like, the reality of this is the Commanders have these inflated expectations this year because they won 12 games, went to an NFC Championship game. But Jaden Daniels was the reason. We know how important quarterback is. We know how important a dynamic quarterback is in today's NFL that can make up for deficiencies. And that's what happened year one. Jaden Daniels made up for a lot of deficiencies for this team. Whether it was a lack of a run game where he's got to go out and run himself. You know, we all got scared, right? You got scared. I got scared. We got scared. Watching him run. Oh, no. Oof. Some scars we can still think of. But the late game comebacks, defense maybe making some mistakes or them. Yeah, like there's a lot of things that a great quarterback can do, and Jaden Daniels has already shown that. But that's just year one. The key now is improvement. What does he look like in year two? Now, by all accounts, smart, hardworking kid, really dedicated. He's talked a lot about his offseason and really, you know, Bobby Wagner is a veteran taking him under his wing, and I think that's really important. The relationship between Jaden Daniels and Bobby Wagner is something that you can't manufacture. It's genuine. Bobby Wagner looks at him not as a threat by any means, right? It's not like Bobby Wagner is a starting quarterback in the NFL and they drafted a young kid and he's like, I don't want it. It's not Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Or Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love. God, the Packers just keep getting... You know? But, like, there's no threat to Bobby Wagner. Future Hall of Famer. All-pro linebacker. And he sees the field from the opposite perspective that Jaden Daniels does. He's the guy on the other side that can teach him what he sees and then also help Jaden Daniels get better. That right there, that relationship happens because Jaden Daniels came to that organization and was able to learn and continuing to learn from the people that are within that organization. That's why when people get mad, oh, you know, giving all these veterans these short contracts and getting all these old guys in here, you need that. Now, it helps when Bobby Wagner had the season that he had last year for them, but in reality, you need to have those veterans in the locker room because it's not just like Bobby Wagner teaching younger linebackers how to play linebacker. It's so much more than that. He's teaching Jaden Daniels how to be an adult, teaching him how to be a leader. Hell, he's teaching him how to invest. All of these things are helping Jaden Daniels focus on what's important. He's not distracted by going out and partying. He's not distracted by any of that stuff that just helps derail careers. And a lot of times, guys' careers, let's be honest, we make stupid decisions when we're young. It happens. But because of the fact that you have what you have in terms of the culture in year one, with Bobby Wagner there specifically, as one of those leaders at the top, that has made such a difference for Jaden Daniels and his growth and his trajectory. And that's why I'm not overly concerned, and I wasn't about Terry McLaurin, so let's hope I can go 2 for 2 on this. I'm not overly concerned about regression from Jaden Daniels, a sophomore slump. Now, that doesn't mean that the numbers are going to match last year, right? What it really means is that as long as he's improving, even if defenses have gotten smarter and he has to then evolve and grow and learn as the season goes on and continue to add layers to his game and a better understanding and really, really immerse himself in film, if you see that, you're going to have yourself a franchise quarterback in your organization for a long, long time. And it's, again, it's multiple pieces that are there. We see Bill Belichick right now coaching North Carolina. What was the conversation? Tom Brady or Bill Belichick? Who made who? The reality of it is both made each other. Both helped each other. It was a perfect match. Now, could Tom Brady have succeeded in other organizations? Maybe. I mean, there's other good coaches out there. It's a possibility. But that was a perfect match. Those two, it was the perfect storm. And that may be the same case for Jaden Daniels here, where in the past, that would never have been said for any young player coming to Washington. But now, that dictates so much of the success that's there. And I think what's really important, too, and one of the reasons why you shouldn't be overly worried about a sophomore slump. And we're talking real sophomore slump. Not like, okay, there's some moments or a couple of bad games in there. The bad games are going to happen. They're going to happen for Jaden Daniels. He's going to have games where he walks off the field and you look and go, what was that? It's just, it's going to happen. We have to prepare ourselves for that. It's just as long as they're not commonplace, like Caleb Williams in year one. But again, you want to talk about situation, that was a mess in Chicago, like big time. So it's not really an easy spot for him to be in. And Caleb Williams, you know, play caller was thrown out right away and the head coach is fired halfway through and there's offensive lines a mess. He's getting sacked left and right, like, It was a disaster walking into there. But the key here, Jaden Daniels is respected by the team. He's mature. They've already gotten the big results, the calm, the woosa, in the big moments, right? And we always want to think about the Hail Mary against Chicago, but there's so many other moments this past season that showed that he's a leader. This team rallies behind him. He's a proven winner. And big results and big moments aren't just about last year, right? It's also about what he did at LSU. I mean, he played in those big moments. Listen, every SEC game is a big game one way or the other. You know, and that's why quarterbacks staying longer in college, you have more of an opportunity to develop. Arch Manning ain't coming out this year, by the way. Just say, any team want to tank for him, even after what you saw against Ohio State, he's going to spend another season there. But getting that extra experience in these big moments at big programs has helped players. Again, I talk about this group of quarterbacks that was drafted, not just Jaden Daniels, but Caleb Williams, Michael Penix Jr. Drake May wasn't, but I mean, think of how many guys transferred. Bo Nix transferred. These are all guys that spent a ton of time in college. They transferred. They got these opportunities. They were able to control a little bit of what their destiny was, their situation, to help dictate that success. You don't get that opportunity necessarily in the NFL, but sometimes it just works out. Like, I would bet if we had some sort of time machine that could go and we could see all the alternate universes, right? Let's go into the multiverse, guys. Let's do that. There are alternate universes where quarterbacks that we regard as busts went to a different team, maybe a different situation altogether or a different coaching staff or whatever, and they'd end up having success. And that's why players want to try to control as much as they can, because it's their career, it's their legacy, and you get one shot at it. Now, I'm not saying that David Carr, not Derek Carr, but David Carr, number one overall pick by the Texans when they were an expansion team, would have been a Hall of Fame quarterback. But what I am saying is he got sacked, it felt like, every other play with an expansion team. And they started in week one with an expansion team. What would his career have looked like had he been drafted 17th overall by, I don't know who had 17th pick in that draft, but you know what I'm talking about. So much of this matters. Like, it doesn't, at this point, if you're a quarterback and you want to have a successful career in the NFL, you got to put your ego aside and not worry about the number that you're drafted at and focus on where you're drafted. Now, you don't really have any control over that, but we know that stuff happens behind the scenes. Hey, he doesn't want to play there. Don't draft him. Stuff is said. You think this stuff's not, that these conversations don't happen behind the scenes? They do. They absolutely do. And that makes a huge difference. And this may end up being one of those situations where, you know, if we're talking about longevity, far beyond just the Giants on Sunday, but if we're talking about longevity with the Commanders, fresh start across the board last year and moving forward here, the momentum just keeps going up. Because they came into this last year, Adam Peters, the rest of the front office, and in the coaching staff, everybody's obviously going to have be on some level of the same page for this thing to work. The idea was rebuild the right way. Guys on short-term deals, veteran-wise, draft well, build this thing up, let's go forward. It helps that you start, you know, your career as a general manager in Adam Peters with the number 2 overall pick and a bunch of quarterbacks to pick from. Caleb Williams was the only one off the board for you. They had choices. And who knows? Drake may have worked out, and Jaden Daniels might have worked out in New England. It could have been good for both where either one of them went, because it's looking like it may work for both of them anyway right now. But because of the fact that you've got the perfect situation for Jaden Daniels right now where he is, that's the difference maker in what could be solid career and Hall of Fame career. That's really the difference. And Bobby Wagner makes a huge, huge difference in all of that. But it's all the veterans around there. And it's the overall culture. And just learn, like, you got, listen, I just saw this Tom Brady talking about today, where, like, he hates quarterbacks and the showboating and all this. And Tom Brady can say whatever he wants. He's got 7 rings. So, like, he can be the old man yells at cloud. But the reality of it is, it's not wrong. You are the CEO of the team on the field as a quarterback. You run the show. You get the big bucks. You get all the glory, but you get all the blame, too. It all falls on you. And you got to be mature. You got to be poised. And you got to continue to grow and want to get better. And I think Jaden Daniels is doing that. I think he's the guy that really wants to be an all-time great. And it's not just the words. It's what he's actually putting in. So check it off on Terry McLaurin. Not worried about the contract situation. That's good. Not worried about Jaden Daniels, year 2, sophomore slump. And I really apologize if I jinxed any of that. But instead, I'm putting it into the universe. Nick Ashew on the Fan. TCU in North Carolina, tied at 7, in case you're wondering. Bill Belichick had a puffy jacket, no sleeveless hoodie. So there's that. Saw Frank Caliendo's taking advantage of Bill Belichick trending. An old interview of him is Chris Berman interviewing Bill Belichick, but it's Caliendo. I'll tell you what, I dudes that can do all these impressions, like, you know, Danny, I do bad voices, but, like, people that can, like, do the voices that actually sound like the people, I think it's impressive. It really is. I mean, Bill Belichick's easy, right? We just have to mumble a lot when we do that. So, again, give me happy Bill Belichick the rest of the way. It's too much fun. Too much fun. You know what's crazy? We spent so much time this offseason talking about Terry McLaurin, and we luckily don't have to worry about that anymore. Don't have to worry about the contract and the who's going to be mad at who. And honestly, does it really matter at this point who won the negotiation? Because here's the thing. Technically, Jerry Jones won the negotiation with Micah Parsons because he didn't have to pay him what he wanted to pay him. But did he really win? So a couple million dollars to these teams really doesn't matter. You don't always have to have a you-know-what measuring contest every single time. But, you know, throughout all of that, and I do think there is a chance, I'm not guaranteeing it, but I think that there is a chance that the offense has some bumps in the road the first couple of weeks of the season, just trying to find a rhythm. It's a work in progress, like Cliff Kingsbury said, even with Terry McLaurin back out there. If we had not had the Terry McLaurin contract dispute going on, and it was just an offseason about everybody there in camp, and there would have been so much more about Deebo Samuel. And like, I feel like, right, like everybody's like, Cam Ward. Nobody's talking about Cam Ward, number 1 overall pick, and it's all about Shador Sanders. Well, yeah, because that's a more polarizing topic. Cam Ward is just out there focused, and, you know, let's be honest, the Titans are really boring, and no one cares. They just are right now. So it's not an interesting topic for people outside of Nashville. But Deebo Samuel in, you know, revenge season wasn't even a conversation for the most part, because everything was about Terry McLaurin. This team gets Deebo Samuel at 90% of peak Deebo. They've got themselves one hell of a weapon and something they were lacking last year. I don't think he's going to spend that much time in the backfield. Again, like, I think this run game is going to be better, and it's not going to be because of just Jaden Daniels running the football. God, I hope it's not a lot, unless you need to. Let's keep him safe. Let's move forward. He got bigger, stronger. Let's keep that going. But, you know, you have somebody now in Deebo Samuel that brings a different dynamic to this offense that I thought, like, Curtis Samuel was going to be to a smaller degree. Like, he was always Deebo light to me, and they never got that. He had a couple of flashes, but he was mostly hurt, and that was the end of that. But Deebo Samuel in better shape and pissed off. Like, I want guys with something to prove, a chip on their shoulder. I want them angry. I want guys coming to my organization that say, you gave me a chance. you believe in me. This other team didn't, or these other teams didn't, or whatever. You drafted me way later than I thought I'd go, and I memorized all the names of all the receivers that went before me. All of that. I want those guys in my organization. That's how you want to build a great culture. And Deebo Samuel's a hardworking guy, and he's tough. Tough. You're bringing a guy that's versatile, a guy that could be a game-changing player at his peak, and you're bringing somebody that's going to be tough. We would have had so much more hype around Deebo this offseason had it not been about Terry McLaurin's contract. Really, it just felt like it overshadowed everything, and that's fine. Like, in the end, we've got what matters, the regular season and what he looks like. That's all that matters. But it's just crazy to think at how much a contract negotiation overshadowed what really could be something we've been begging for a while, right? A consistent number two weapon next to Terry McLaurin. Now, again, it's they're not the same. They're not going to be used the same way, and Noah Brown's going to be in his own spot when he's healthy and out there. Like, that's going to be its own thing. But Deebo Samuel is now another weapon that defenses have to know where he is at all times. A couple of flashes in the preseason, right? And you went, oh, boy. Like, this could, even if it takes a couple of weeks, could be even more dynamic of an offense than next year. And again, like, it's human nature, right, to start to think of, like, the what if, and we fill in the blank, and it's always, like, the biggest worry. Especially if you're a fan of a team that's, like, always had this kind of stuff happen, right? We've been there. Like, it's fine. But there's also the other side of the coin. And there's the what if this offense is spectacular this year. Which, in reality, is more realistic because, well, they're striving to be better, right? So if you're putting in an effort to be something, the odds are more in your favor because you're striving towards that goal and trying to avoid the bad side of things, the bad side of the coin. Listen, I'm not saying that Deebo Samuel is going to give us like 1,400 yards receiving. That was years ago. I think we're probably past that. And I don't think he's going to be used in the way that like racks up those yards necessarily. But you get a guy that can run the ball out of the backfield some. Get a guy that can go out there and get you 800, 900 yards receiving. A few hundred on the ground maybe. Used in special situations, some trick plays, maybe even as a return guy at times. Takes away from some of the other weapons they have. Takes pressure off of Jaden Daniels in so many ways there. And, it was a no-brainer to make that trade. A fifth-round pick? Are you kidding me? Like, it's a steal. This is going to be one of the steals of the offseason. The Commanders could get one of the big steals of the draft in Bill Kroski-Merritt. And they could get one of the big steals in terms of a trade this offseason in Deebo Samuel. And really, that's how you build a consistent winner. Because you have to make those moves every offseason. Because here's the thing. The first offseason that this front office had led to a 12-win season. This second offseason, you're supposed to build on that. Even if it's not 13 wins, it's making the team better as a whole. But they're done. The offseason's over. So now, it's what do you do next offseason, and the offseason after that, and the offseason after that. And by the way, next offseason, a lot more contracts to talk about. You ready for that? Because there's going to be a lot of guys entering a contract here that are going to want a new deal this next offseason. I know we haven't had week one yet. We're just entering week one, but I'm just telling you that's going to be part of it. But that's how you build a winner. That's how you build a consistent winner every single year. You draft well, but you also make those decisions in the offseason where sometimes you're buying low on guys, and you see that it's maybe scheme. Or it's sometimes a lack of motivation. Warrant player just tired of being where he is. Time for something new, right? Like, you don't know the inner workings, and a lot of these organizations will, good ones will, have conversations and figure out what's going on and do their research to find out, okay, this guy actually still got a lot left in the tank. They're just not using him right in San Francisco or whatever. And again, also, we look at the 49ers. The 49ers could have a big jump again this year because everybody was hurt last year. A lot of players will kind of just sit the end of the regular season when you know like you're not winning anything as opposed to playing hurt, playing through stuff. But I'll say this, Terry McLaurin's under a microscope too. So like it brings both of these to the table. But I'm telling you, man, like Deebo Samuel in a revenge season, the underrated storyline heading into this year. Really, really is. But like I said, that does mean Terry McLaurin now under a microscope. And it reminds me of another situation in D.C. that happened not too long ago where a fan favorite suddenly became kind of the enemy when money was involved. Tell you what that is next. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Terry McLaurin is under a microscope. And this just comes with the territory, and I don't think that there's anybody in this world that would be like, you know, I'd rather not get a raise because I don't want to have any criticism, or I don't want to be under a microscope or have higher expectations. That's just, I mean, I guess there's some people, but I think any reasonable person would say, yeah, you'd probably take the raise. Now, money changes perspective a lot. And now when you look at Terry McLaurin, right, you expect him to perform. Went through all this offseason. You expect him to have a Terry McLaurin season. You want it to be like last year. You want 13 touchdowns. You expect significant amount of receiving yards or whatever the case is. And if he does that, everybody's happy. Just wash your hands clean. But if he doesn't, because now we talk about inflated expectations maybe for just surrounding this team as a whole, right? The Commanders, 12 wins. You get into this, it's like, oh, now everybody expects the same. Like, eh. They overachieved significantly last year. It's a reason why there are a lot of people around the NFL that thinks there's going to be some level of regression. However you define regression, that's what a very common belief is around the NFL right now about the Commanders. But when you now look at where Terry McLaurin is, the expectations are extremely high. And if you go back to Bryce Harper's last year in D.C., when the numbers were really starting to be discussed about what type of money he was going to get in the offseason, right? That was Juan Soto just come up. But that was the year, obviously, before they won the World Series. We know what happened. Bryce leaves, goes to Philadelphia, all those things. And people are throwing around $300 million, which, you know, $350 million, whatever the number was. I mean, I know they offered him $300, but it was higher. Anyway, when those numbers started to get thrown out there, things were so much more venomous towards Bryce Harper. Every strikeout, every foul ball, any mistake, why didn't he hit another home run this game or this, whatever the case is, those voices got louder and louder and louder. He hadn't even gotten paid yet. It was just about the perception of what he could have gotten paid. It was the same thing with Kirk Cousins. When Kirk Cousins was, you know, dealing with franchise tag versus long-term deal and what the Redskins were going to pay him at the time and what that thing was going to look like and the contract and how much he deserved. I mean, he broke all kinds of franchise records. He was a good quarterback when he was in Washington. You wouldn't take him over Jaden Daniels, but from the gap that you had from Jaden Daniels going back to Kirk Cousins, everything in between, you're taking Kirk, right? Like, it would have been fine. But when you start talking about money and you start talking about big money, that's when people go from fan favorite or we love them or they're underrated or they're underpaid to either perform at the highest level and it's right where you're supposed to be, even if it's inflated expectations and people are just looking at like the overarching, you know, drone footage type picture as opposed to like the nitty gritty of every game and why things happen the way they were, whatever the case is. People either go to the big picture there or it's overpaid. Overrated. Didn't deserve it. We had all this conversation all offseason, and for what? We're arguing about $30 million versus $32 million, and for what? So the spotlight is on Terry McLaurin. The microscope is absolutely on him, and it's either going to be a bright sunlight that burns him, or that spotlight just magnifies how great he is, right? I'll even throw a name out there for you, and this is a long time ago. Joe Johnson, ISO Joe. Man, remember him? Joe Johnson with the Hawks before his six-year, $120 million deal, which was, at the time in the NBA, a monster deal. That was the 2010 free agency offseason with, you know, LeBron and Amari Stoudemire and everybody, right? It was a massive free agency. Everybody was like, oh my God, all these names. Joe Johnson was regarded as one of the most underrated players in the NBA. Could play the one, two, the three, I mean, defender. Could run the point when they needed it, score, shooter, like all these things. I've always been a big fan of Joe Johnson. Great player in his prime. But once he got paid, oh, the narrative was different. Then he had to exceed the inflated expectations. Even if he was a similar player to what he was before he got paid, then it had to be more, even though he really got paid for what he had done. He earned that 6 years, $120 million contract because of what he had already done on the court. It's not... Yeah, people then expected more as opposed to the same. So there is going to be a significant amount of just little nitpicking, poking holes in Terry McLaurin in every game. And he may have a game against the Eagles where he has three catches for 47 yards. People are looking around going, this guy makes $32 million a year and this is what we get. It's coming. just get yourself ready. And some of it is, again, that's what comes with the territory. You're not going to get 100 yards, two touchdowns every game from Terry McLaurin, from any receiver, anybody. There are going to be bad games, defensive schemes, double teams, just, you know, weather conditions, quarterback just can't get them open, can't throw, whatever the case is. Again, what do I always say about receivers? You could pay them all this money, but if you don't have that assembly line of success in order, offensive line, you know, protecting the quarterback, great play calling from the coordinator, quarterback that has time to throw the football and can accurately get the ball to that wide receiver, all that money you spent on that wide receiver, you just throwing it all away. You're a rapper at a strip club, just wasting it. It's all gone. They're overpaid decoys. That's it. Now, I'm not saying that that's what Terry McLaurin is going to be this year. In fact, I expect a very good season from him again. But what I am saying is there is a chance that we have a much louder narrative than we've had in the past of people finding the, let's just say, the less than ideal parts of Terry McLaurin's game or an individual performance in that game. It's going to be a lot more of it under the microscope. It just comes with the territory. But I'll tell you this, he doesn't care, and I don't blame him. I wouldn't either. So, all right, we got another hour to go. Nick Ashy on the Fan.